Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, you are listening to the Third Coast Pocket Conference. I'm Isabel Vasquez. On this episode, we're bringing you a session from across the world, recorded at the 2018 Audiocraft Conference in Sydney, Australia. After listening to this episode, if you like what you heard, head over to the Audiocraft podcast and make sure to subscribe for more sessions from this and previous years. Okay, so for this session, we are diving in to how music can transform an audio story. Audiocraft's Jess O'Callaghan moderates a discussion between independent producer Jay Krantz and John Chia of Paper Radio, both of whom are not only great audio producers, but also musicians who think carefully about the role of music in story. Together, they consider music as an element of storytelling that can add, detract, or play with the other components of the piece. So from Audiocraft 2018, here is Fine Tune.
So I'm really excited to be on stage with these two. We want to pull back the curtain for you on the creative process behind music selection and give people a vocabulary as well for talking about music. So like I'm definitely used to saying things like I want like the blippy bloppy sounds or can we not have this sound just like Poddington Bear, and that's like my only frame of reference. And so what I really love about these two and their brains is that they know what they want in music and they know how to talk about it, and so I hope that they'll be able to shed light on both these things today. So we're talking about music, and a lot of it is going to be focusing on just that. And I think that we're using music in more creative, different ways in podcasting these days. So it's not just that sort of feature style music isn't just being used in radio features anymore. It's also being used in news podcasts, in conversational podcasts. And so I think really, like, no matter what you make, if you're working in audio, these are useful skills to have in your toolbox, useful things to be thinking really smartly about. So I'm really excited to be here with you two talking about this today. We'll be listening to a lot of things too. So I wanted to kind of start by asking both of you, like, what's the function for you of music in an audio story? So I know you're both struggling with this because you're like, music is the audio story. But we might start with you, Jay. Like, what is music doing for you? Why are you using it at all?
It's still mysterious to me the way music can add movement and forward propulsion, push time forward and backwards, which I'll play an example of later on, offer a promise in the form of music to the listener as a kind of side note, or augur something that's coming, and the tension that brings, similarly to signal a change before it's going to happen, and turn some of the material into a kind of sonified image, if you will, that plays behind the surface content of the music and kind of grows and develops in the background, creating a kind of another dimension that can exist in the story alongside the rest of it. But also one of the really important things, because John brought up this idea when we were discussing this, that music can replace the voice. And I've heard a few examples recently, and all the examples I'm giving are recent things I've heard, because if I try to go back to everything I've loved, you know,
it would just be a whole day of Jay
breakdown.
Sharing music with
yeah.
you.
I think that when when the music comes in place of something that we already know someone's going to say, I think it amplifies the idea in a way that can be more complex and more interesting than the thing that was going to be said. And I think the essence of that is, of allowing the music to speak, is that it lets our unconscious processes sort of kick in and forces our imagination to augment what's there and lets our imagination spill into the material.
It's interesting that I think the way that you both talk about this is like adding a dimension. And I think that when you're starting out and when you're first like learning that you can add music to things, you sort of think of it as like you're adding a layer of something. Whereas for you two, you're kind of adding like an entire dimension that is part of that story. Is that what do you look for when you're adding music to a piece? Like what's your purpose, John?
Well, I guess I just think it's the same. Like music is kind of the same as sound design, which is the same as voice. They're all just information, and so I guess like music as a tool in radio, it can kind of add a certain, like it can undermine the voice, and it's not that one's more important than the other, they just sort of play off each other. So you can have, I mean, you know, you have this when you're producing, that you're sort of auditioning bits of music under stuff like, oh, this is totally not right, and really kind of tuning into those moments where like, well, why is it not right? Or what is it actually achieving? What is it affecting, even if it's not what you want to keep in the final thing? That's a really kind of direct educational process. Like someone saying something really stupid and the music's really serious, or vice versa. Like that tension is really a beautiful and important tool that you have at your disposal. And I guess the other thing I look for is just stuff that veers off the harmonic chart as well. That's not, you know, like moods for music are just... the classic is major chords are happy, minor chords are sad. But, you know, and that's great. That's a really...
That's a classic. I knew that one.
I mean, you know, people just talk about that all the time. But once you start listening for it, I mean, just look it up and look up YouTube and, like, find out what those things are if you don't know. But, like, that's kind of just your hand on the doorknob. And once you open that door and get beyond things that sound right together or things that just sound... automatically write and look for things that sound that kind of implant a question mark in your chest. I think that's just a really good way to kind of enter thinking about music.
Something else that you do really well with music that I know Jay admires as well is like cheekiness in music and using music under your, like using music as part of your work to kind of have fun or play. Is that something that like you set out to do, or is that just like, is that just you're making stuff and that happens?
For me, it's part of... I guess it's part of the aesthetic backyard that I really love. You know, some people like fruit trees, some people like flowers. I like stupid, cheeky shit.
I think to help us kind of talk about this and, like, why we use music and the different reasons we can use it, let's listen to something. Jay, you chose this piece. It's a moment from a podcast that uses music particularly well. So do you want to set this one up for us?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is just a little example just to get us in it of what I was talking about before about just a tiny... The last thing I heard where the kind of music came in and filled something in. So... it's from Caliphate, which, for those of you who don't know, is the new serialized podcast by the New York Times, which follows Rukmini Kalamaki, the Times foreign correspondent and terrorism expert, as she reports on the Islamic State, which is her beat, how it draws in followers and the power it wields. With the story focusing on an ISIS source she finds living in Canada. And I just think it's a mini example of something elegantly done and sort of understated that both sort of withholds and fills at the same time.
Yeah, I don't think we thought that like the New York Times reporting on ISIS was going to be like a breakthrough in beautiful music design, but it really is.
Yeah, it's amazing. And Andy Mills produces it, and he's always been really amazing with music.
All right, let's have a listen. They use the exact same justification for every attack. It's that they do it to us, so we do it to them. They bomb our women and children indiscriminately, we do it to them. Yeah.
So at a certain point, you decide that you want to quit.
Yeah.
Can you, was there one moment or a series of moments?
The second time I did the kill, I killed someone.
Yeah, it's very similar. I just think that the music comes in place of a description of something immense, and it's inclusive by having us fill it in. Is it a heart flatlining? Is it something in him going dead? Finitude, you know, it doesn't matter. It feels specific, and I think that forces us to find something, to have a specific response that's more personal.
And so for you to have that response to something when you're a listener, so rather than as a maker, when you're a listener and you're, you know, flicking through podcasts, for you to come away from a story going like, whoa, they use music really well, what does it need to do for you?
I think a lot of the time, well, first of all, I sort of take it in as a whole, where I want it to be a kind of sonic ecosystem where one grows the other. I don't want to feel they're separate. So while I pay attention, and there are certainly times when the music is really striking and I'm very aware of it, but actually, and this is sort of going to contradict everything I've said and will say, but the best times is when I try really hard to notice it and I don't. And it's the same in a movie. I'm like, I'm going to really listen to what they're doing with the music. I get to the end and I go, shit. You know, I forgot. And I think the same happens when it's like it merges into something insoluble, the combination, almost like I'm under a spell, because they're just so well paired and they're speaking to each other.
John, what is it about audio? Is there something in particular that if you walk away going like, yeah, that was great, like what spell have they had to cast on you?
Well, yeah, I think it's very similar. Like when they don't feel like separate entities, they're just sort of part of this one unit moving through space or moving through time in your head. But then I also kind of like stuff where it's quite obvious that the music is kind of plonked in, and I just like to feel like it's a deliberate move. Like maybe the music doesn't just get dropped in how it was mixed in the studio. Maybe it like is the stereo field is narrowed and it's placed slightly to the left or something. Like it just has a place, it has a position. And I guess otherwise I just like things that have a physicality to them or a kind of a visceral quality that helps to, yeah, again, kind of push you through a story or subtly kind of guide you.
Is there something that music, like are there qualities in certain pieces of music that do have that propulsion? Like I know when I'm looking for music sometimes, I am looking for something that'll like move me forward. And like what qualities could a piece of music have that would offer that like momentum?
There is one example, if we have time, that the Second Caliphate example has some of that, I think. I mean, I think usually it has to have some sort of pulse under it. I mean, it's usually, I think, either way, you want to feel it as a contrast to something. It has to be less static than what's happening, say, in the voice. Yeah. So I think as long as there's more movement than that, then we'll experience it as a shift.
There's a piece that you brought along to share that stayed with you lately. Should we have a listen? Do you want to set this up?
Yeah, sure. This is just from a podcast called Swipe Left, Swipe Left. And I just think it's an interesting example because it's quite accessible. This specific piece of music is like a synth arpeggio, so it's a sequence of repeated notes that kind of, if you play them at the same time, they kind of form a scale or a chord. You didn't need to know.
Classic.
That. So sorry. But basically, so what they've done in order to kind of create some variation with the same kind of tonality is, I think they've pulse stretched, which is like extreme time stretching. This arpeggio, so when the story is kind of trying to shift gears a little bit, they've preserved a lot of the tone, but they've used the same piece of music and just kind of edited it. And I just thought it was kind of an interesting example of someone doing that really simple thing.
Do you know that by listening to it, or do you know that because you've read or something about it?
Yeah, sorry, it's from listening to it because, yeah. This is the thing, like, you do things over and over and you get used to how different tools sound. And maybe it's not how they did it at all, but you feel confident enough that maybe this is, if you were going to try and get to there, and this is like what being a producer is, if you were going to try and get to there, this thing you have in your head, these are the ways I'd probably do it.
All right, so think about that while we listen to this.
But the next thing was, he delved into the bag and I thought, please don't bring out the dildo. I'm going to say something. I really, really don't want that dildo anywhere near me. And please don't bring out the pegs. He pulled out a bottle of poppers and I remember seeing the words extra strong.
It actually had nothing to do with music. I just wanted that.
Was that thing about repeating a piece of music even true?
Like listening to it, I don't know. Like, I was kind of wasn't really paying attention.
Jay, let's talk about some things that have stuck with you recently. What's sort of got your ears interested?
A couple of things I heard recently I won't play, but I just thought one of them really struck me, which was from a podcast called Awful Grace that Audiocrafts Jess Binnath introduced me to. Thanks, Jess. I love it. It's produced by Robert Anderson out of Chicago, and he made a 1 hour, 47-minute episode that I'll play the beginning of soon. But it makes no sense for me to play the intermission, but he did put a 7-minute musical interlude right in the middle, and it's a piece about death within a piece that's about deaths in Chicago. And it just made me think that we get so expedient about how we use music, and especially now as we're moving away from broadcast kind of limitations, I think there's room to explore a bit more room in allowing musical moments to reflect and deepen our experience of a piece rather than assuming that people are going to have those experiences later after hearing the piece. So both that and he does this exit music, and Caliphate also did a 1.5-minute exit music that they didn't need to put there, but helped me, you know, it was more than a digestive. It actually, like, changed how I felt about the piece.
Yeah, I found that I didn't even notice with the Caliphate one, I didn't realise that I was listening to it still. Like, I was walking home and I was like, oh, no one's talked in a really long time, but I'm still feeling things about this story. Yeah. And so what's this example that you've brought as well?
Yeah, so this is the introduction. And, you know, I just have to apologise. I think all my examples, I realised, are morbid. at least I'm sticking to a theme. But, you know...
Not John's theme.
I was trying to go goth today.
Exactly. But I think he achieves more with music than I've ever experienced in a podcast for me. I'd like to talk about what I think he does afterwards rather than take away, because I think he creates an environment in which so many experiences can be had from it. But I do like that he seems to not give a flying fuck about what music he should play or what other people do. And I think you can hear that. And even though it feels thought about, it feels kind of radically fearless. So this is from an episode called They Tell Me You're Wicked, which is dedicated to a 13-year-old and 11-year-old who died in Chicago were killed in July 2014.
Ready? One, two, three. Johanna's pregnant.
For real? Oh my God!
I'm gonna be a grandfather.
Oh my God, I can't breathe, I can't.
Yes, push, more, push, more, Alexis. More, more.
Yep. Oh,
okay, take a breath, take a breath. Okay, now go again.
He's here, he's here.
And he goes on to do a few other amazing things before the kind of main section of the piece. But I just love how he collapses time. The music helps us sort of transition through those stages, and he weaves in emotion without kind of pushing anything on us, and then sort of seamlessly drops us into the world of the story, the train level crossing, which I assume is in Chicago. So holding us in something very personal while I think also speaking to the epic, which is where the story lies in these kind of bigger arcs of life and death and tragedy. But he gives the music lifting work by associating it with birth and life at the beginning. And then when he sort of literally interrupts the music, I think it's pure augury and pure foreboding about life interrupted and something unnatural about to happen. It's just one example of what he does.
This is working on this podcast, or not podcast, working on this session with you. It's the first time I've heard that podcast, and it's, yeah, really haunting and beautiful and just, yeah, masterful.
Yeah.
Hey, sorry to cut in. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a minute with the rest of this session.
You're listening to Chicago's Progressive
Radio Adventures.
This American Life, am I right?
The show about all the unseen.
Are you tired of endlessly searching for good radio stories? Or maybe feeling overwhelmed by the amount of podcasts filling up your feed?
This is Radio Lab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
Well, worry no more, because Third Coast has you covered. I'm Gwen Maxey, host of Third Coast's podcast, Resound. Resound is a themed, hour-long mix of the best in radio and podcasting from the past and present. We've been carefully curating nothing but the best stories from around the world since 2004, and we have a treasure trove of amazing audio. Each episode is bound to have something to fit every listener's individual taste. Personal stories, essays, sound art, mystery stories that twist and turn, and other audio experiments. So stop searching. Subscribe to Resound today and treat yourself to the finest stories ever told in sound. Your ears will thank us.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right?
For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, we're back with the rest of this session from AudioCraft 2018.
I think we're going to move on to one of our case studies, and if we have time for more examples of things you guys have listened to at the end, we'll come back to some of our other pieces to share. So I think we'll start with your case study, John. So I asked these two to pick two stories that they'd worked on where we could share share something without music, and then talk about how they chose to use music, and then how, you know, hear what it sounded like afterwards. So this is a tone change again.
I just want to go and cry for a bit and then maybe come back to this later.
But, you know, we're going to go there. So tell us about this story. Tell us about The Big Prawn.
The Big Prawn is a piece from Paper Radio, the podcast I've been making. It's a fiction piece, a short story written by a writer called Cartier Pace. I don't know if there's any point in explaining much about the story, but...
It's about The Big Prawn.
Yeah, The Big Prawn in Ballina, if you haven't seen it. Bunnings owns it.
So shall we hear it without music first?
Sure. Yeah.
She laughed and put a fist under her chin and said, My favourite place in the whole world would have to be...
The Big Prawn.
I said, where's that? And she said it's in Ballina. And she said it was her favourite place because I was conceived there. She said it was huge and pink and on the way to Byron Bay, where she met Dad. I asked if there were big prawns in Antarctica, and she said
probably not.
Conceived at the Big Prawn?
Yeah, you tell me. I don't know. I think it's... I mean, I've been to the Big Prawn and I don't know where. But this is your example, so...
Somewhere in the tail.
Maybe the music... will give us something that'll evoke the answer to that question. Do you want to explain anything before we hear it with music?
Well, do you want me to talk about that before or after hearing it?
Is there anything we should listen for while we're listening to it?
I guess so. Part of the process of doing stuff like this for me is trying to kind of cast the music and musical elements like a guitar or something as a character or as extra information, so they have a bit of a voice, and also kind of two things: using sound effects and sound design as cues for me to compose with, like composing with samples and then putting music around that, and the other thing is using musical notes and sequences as kind of metaphors and stuff. I don't know. Sorry.
No, yeah. I think we're going to hear another example as well, which makes really clear the sort of using sound effects musically as well, because that's something that you do really well. All right, let's hear it with music, The Big Prawn.
She laughed and put a fist under her chin and said, My favourite place in the whole world would have to be
The Big Prawn.
I said, where's that? And she said, it's in Ballina. And she said it was her favourite place because I was conceived there. She said it was huge and pink and on the way to Byron Bay, where she met Dad. I asked if there were big prawns in Antarctica, and she said
probably not.
Kind of just fades out.
So thinking about that music, like what we were talking about earlier with the forward propulsion, like once she gets over the big prawn, there is this sort of forward momentum that you've got there with the music. Is that, I mean, what qualities, if you were to use your vocabulary that I don't have, what qualities does that music have?
Well, I think like it's pretty referential again. It sort of has that 60s bubblegummy kind of romantic thing with the kind of palm-muted guitar and a lot of reverb, which is just really kind of very evocative of different genres, and the kind of all of the meaning that's wrapped up in those things you can just kind of package and paste into some of the stuff that you do.
Yeah, it makes you think of like a faded postcard that has the big prawn on it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, just like kind of swishy guitars that that kind of maybe sometimes evoke for me like the swinging of the tail or the kind of romantic feeling of like, you know, the dad and stuff like that. And then I guess it... I can't remember the end. Yeah. No, I can't remember. That's
the,
it.
The music in Paper Radio sounds to me like I can always... I feel like I can tell that something's a Paper Radio story and a lot of it is to do with the music and the sound design. Is there some... Like, are you coming to that project with a certain idea about what music should be in a Paper Radio story? Because I think it does sound unique among, you know, your other extensive work as well.
I think it's changed a bit, but I think, I mean, I feel pretty strongly about, I absolutely adore the kind of gorgeous, rich and pensive work that Jay makes and that also Jay has shown examples of so far. And, like, those moods are things I'm trying to get better at, but I guess the things that I feel most comfortable with are things that have... maybe too much colour even. I'm sure people have listened to our stories and just thought there's too much going on, and I respect that opinion.
Shall we listen to a piece that is also from Paper Radio that does have a lot going on that note?
Sure.
So this is really interesting because you have, it's sound design, it's sound effects, but it's also used, it is music, the way that you've used it. Do you want to have a talk about that?
Yeah, so this is a piece about solitary, what are they called? Sensory deprivation tank. And this is the sequence where he comes out. And so there's like, he's talking about how his senses are enlivened by the deprivation. And I guess I tried to fill that in.
And the piece is called The Isolation, Solitude, Confinement, Happiness, Freedom Domain. If you want to go listen to it after, it's very good. Let's make this play.
But those senses, those glorious senses, they're back too. Colours look more vibrant and lurid, they pop. And sounds sound richer, more complex and layered. Smells are particularly pungent.
And so when you're, what's the process to do that? Not the whole process. Well, it's like part. How do you even think about doing that?
Well, I think I just really try to think about what's happening in the story and what are the different elements of the mood. And so he's talking in this animated voice. The kind of key of the music should be playful, but it shouldn't be too, it's not meant to be too uplifting or anything. So uplifting would be like kind of swelling chords or held notes. It needed to be quite rhythmic, and so there was sort of the xylophony marimba things, and lots of percussion is quite playful. So I guess and then there's like the peeing sound, and I just thought, well, how can I make the peeing sounds sound more lurid? And I thought, well, okay, well, that kind of popping sound is like a synth, like a filter envelope, so it's like, you know, the opening up of the tone, so I can just sort of make a bunch of those happen. And I know, yeah,
I'm only laughing at you because you're like talking really intricately about how to make the peeing sound more lurid, and I love it.
Know your product.
You were using words there. You were using some words that like I didn't understand, and then other words which were like uplifting, you know, things like that. So you both have developed these incredible musical vocabularies from being musicians, which is then translated into your beautiful audio work. If people who don't have musical backgrounds, who aren't musicians, wanted to kind of sharpen their musical vocabulary, what can you recommend they do? Like, where do they start? I mean, earlier you said go to YouTube and learn about those two chords. Like, that's really helpful advice. Like, is there anything else like that that you'd recommend people do? Start a band.
Start a band. I'll just really quickly say, I think... like none of that stuff comes naturally, obviously. It's like very constructed language, but listening is, I mean, it's so obvious. Listening is the key, but finding a way to structure your listening is really helpful. So When you're listening to like one sound or many sounds and trying to figure out what's going on, it's always about change. It's like what's happening with the time, what's happening over time is like, do beats fall away very quickly like staccatos, like really kind of like that, or are they kind of swelling and then falling away? Are things overlapping? You know, is the sound narrow or is it wide? Trying to figure out, yeah, the differences, just, yeah, what's happening over time. Like, is,
and are there certain writers or critics or anyone who you think talks about music really well, or who people should read, or like, are there any sort of resources for people who are trying to get better at talking about music that you can think of?
I mean, I haven't really thought about the answer to this question before, but I do think that you're going to probably learn most first anyway about music you know well. So I would start by taking music you know well but may not have a language for, and go and listen to the musician talk about it or being interviewed about it, because you'll have a reference to build from, I think. I think I've learned a lot that way. But also I loved your blippy bloppy at the beginning, and I actually think it's really important if you can and if you are working with musicians to find musical languages within your podcast or your piece that are specific to what you're working on and that don't reference anything else. And it might be talking about the sound of wanting to evoke fog in a piece that's foggy, or, you know, just at finding words and references and images that you want to sonify within the work as well, and building your own language with whoever you're working with, I think can also create some really interesting results.
I'd really like to talk about your case study, The Leaves. So that's something, all of those things are kind of applied here, like into this piece that you brought along. So how did you approach the music in this piece?
Actually, I didn't realise how big this would be. I don't know what steps would even means. So two things. One is, generally, I like to sort of, anything I approach, I try and create a kind of pocket universe for the listener to live inside for the duration of the piece. And, you know, I try and evoke at least one element within the story, whether that's the environment or the internal state of the character, just as long as it's kind of habitable, seeable, and able to be experienced. And I just try and leap in my imagination into that place and just not let go, and hope that if I stay there long enough, you know, the listener will sort of eventually join me. There's a nice quote from E.L. Doctorow about writing, where he says, good writing is supposed to evoke sensation in the reader, not the fact that it's raining, but the feeling of being rained upon. And it's certainly what I was trying to do here, and what I always try and do is get inside it. So first I'm playing a voice-only version so that you can hear how heavily cut the vocal is. So I tried not to change anything fundamental to her rhythm, but I wanted to get under the skin of the person telling this story, and to kind of invite us into her state of mind and urgency by pushing and pulling on her natural rhythm so that it sort of felt tensile and like it didn't relent. So we can just hear the voice only one first.
I knew I wasn't overdosing anyone.
I just knew that was the only way I was going to get out quietly without any fuss as planned. You know, my dad was going to be at work. I was going to be able to take his car. So when everyone was asleep, I got out of bed, made the bed shape, make a little shape that looked like a body in the bed, got the suitcase out from under the bed, picked up car keys, went down the hallway, through the garage, to the laneway, and that was, the car was there. It was an old white station wagon. I'd never driven, but I drove. What a mental idea. I did sideswipe a parked car. It's dark and there's lights going past, and I'm a bit worried about how narrow the street seemed, and I don't remember sleeping that night.
Do you want to say anything before we hear it with music?
Yeah, well, just mainly that I've zoomed in on... it's not really that interesting. It just shows that I use three or four layers of music here, because I just felt one wasn't enough. And so I used pre-recorded music in this situation, and I put different ones together as well as layering some on top of each other. And because I wanted to sort of build, she's making a decision to leave home because she has a violent father, and then she makes a decision to drug the family and then to escape and then steal the car and then not knowing how to drive. And so I wanted it to step up, so I grabbed other stuff. But also what might be interesting to listen for is the fact that they kind of don't quite go together. And as more and more comes in the music, it's almost a bit sickening. They sort of just work, and that's partly... because I wanted it to feel unsettling, and I also, you know, she'd been attacked with a knife and there was this sort of scraping car, and I sort of went for something a bit metallic to sort of feel that knife edge, and I added sort of punctuating sound design so that you would also just be sort of pricked into the moment of also just the physicality of where she is while all this sort of... discomfort is and suspense is building in the background, as well as some repetition.
Let's hear it.
I was really lonely after my mum died. My dad drove a cab at night. He'd come home about 4 or 5 in the morning. If he came home, because he always used to disappear for days, he'd go on drinking binges, gambling binges, dice, cards, anything really, horses. The last event that made me realise that I had to get out of there, he was yelling at me, and he picked up a kitchen knife, carving knife, and ran at me. In that time leading up to when I left, I'd accumulated a small stash of Valium and Mogadon of my dad's. So on the night that I was leaving, I slipped quantities of those into people's beverages. When I made their evening tea, so my stepmum, my poor grandmother who was visiting from Greece at the time, who was sleeping in the same room as me, crushed the pills, stir it a bit and give them a cup of tea. I knew I wasn't overdosing anyone. I just knew that was the only way I was going to get out quietly without any fuss as planned. You know, my dad was going to be at work. I was going to be able to take his car. So when everyone was asleep, got out of bed, made the bed shape, made a little shape that looked like a body in the bed, got the suitcase out from under the bed, picked up car keys, went down the hallway, through the garage, to the laneway, and that was the car was there. It was an old white station wagon. I'd never driven, but I drove. What a mental idea. I did sideswipe a parked car. It's dark and there's lights going past, and I'm a bit worried about how narrow the streets seem, and I don't remember sleeping that night.
I just want to thank Eleanor McDowell, who's in the room from Falling Tree, for commissioning that. Thank you, Eleanor.
I want to thank her for commissioning it too. It's beautiful. I'm only going to ask a couple more questions before we go to the audience questions. But something that I did want to talk to you about, Jay, is like your process, like very nuts and bolts style. Like, what do you, how you go about doing this? So you have like a real process to come about something that's like very creative.
Yeah, and it's never the same every time. I mean, the first thing I do is. Just to use another writing example, I think it was George Saunders who said, you know, that when he writes and when he edits, it's a bit like going to the optometrist. He's like, but I like this, I like this, you know. And the first thing I do is check, like, is it actually better with music? And let tape that is strong and doesn't need it be without it. And then once you are putting music, just keep checking. Is it better like this? Is it better like that? And because, you know, people have to see through it. It is a bit like a prescription, and you have to be careful about what they're going to see and really make very conscious choices about that. So that's the first thing I do. I suppose I ask myself, like, how can I evoke something beyond the sound of the thing itself to try and inspire different creative choices, and there's a Hiding Place example, if we want to play that, of something where there's something not literal. It's really quick.
Should we have a listen to this?
Sure. This is my dad's earliest memory.
Pansy flowers,
and his second memory.
Sitting on Dad's back, watching men marching by in formation.
And then
my next memory would be in hiding.
Yeah, so that's just a tiny example of working with the power of suggestion. He went into hiding in World War II in Poland, and that's actually just a recording. That sound that sounds like marching, because we link it, is just an old record turning under the music. So I think we, you know, if we should stay open to those things, because sometimes they can be more interesting than if I'd stuck marching feet. So I try and just, I don't know, just embrace the idea that music is abstract and the power of suggestion can be more interesting, and to remember to be open to that. Another practical thing I do is keep a music folder as soon as I know I'm going to start working on something and start bowerbirding.
I love that. You call it like a commonplace book for music.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think, something gets activated the minute you're thinking about a piece and you do start hearing things as well as getting ideas. And it means that once you go to work on something, you've already got a little sort of mood board to start with.
John, what sort of practical things do you do when you're approaching this process?
That folder thing is exactly it as well, especially for things that I know have to have a really strong and clear structure, where the moods have to be really strong and I am going to draw on music that already exists for it. For me making stuff myself, there's not really a process. I personally really like to start from a small detail and just kind of expand it out. And, yeah, as Jay says, just test it out every now and then and keep asking, is it working? Does it need anything? Does it need less? And what is the other thing that it needs? Is it, like, the same voice kind of doubled a little bit, or is it a note, or is it a texture or something like that?
And before we go to audience questions, what do you think about this moment in time we're at in podcasting? What do you think in terms of music, like looking at listening to everything that you're listening to, what do we sound like musically in podcasting at the moment?
I feel like from all the examples we've listened to and from the stuff that I listen to, it's so varied. Like some people are really... Does Poddington Bear still have, like, is he still paying his mortgage? There's a lot of, like, I mean, people are using a lot of stock music. There's people who are really going far out into really deep production, and I kind of love it all. It's just exciting to hear people playing with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's something happening where it's becoming more hegemonic on one hand, and then it's going more cinematic on the other, with something like S Town, and even that Making of a Massacre little clip that was played this morning was quite cinematic to me. And whereas before I think people went as far as using bands, now there's film composers coming in and bringing that skill set to, I mean, I'm sure there were before, but it's more audible than it was before.
Yeah, definitely. Like film, how different do you think that is, that sound of film music and that style of music to sort of traditional radio production music?
It's a really good question that I was thinking about this morning, and I don't have the answer to it, but I think it's... I don't think people have been given the opportunity to score things, and I think, for one thing, it's usually scored. In these more, like in the S-Town example, say. And so they kind of use motifs and they really can decide where they want the music to sit and make something completely original that is completely responsive to that one podcast, as opposed to sort of drawing stuff in and mixing and matching a bit more.
So we're going to take some of your questions, and we are recording this for the Audiocraft podcast. So wait till the microphone gets to you before starting.
A really quick question. With the They Tell Me You're Wicked example, that piece already exists, so it wasn't written for that podcast. Where do you think we should be finding those people who are up-and-comers and composers and people who are wanting to get into those scoring scenes, because I'm a music school dropout and I can't find anyone to damn score my podcast.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think the minute there's money, there'll be people. Pretty much. I worked with musicians on the Radio Hour, which was a live non-fiction show that Jess mentioned, and they'd never worked on podcast or radio stuff before, and it was all original scoring, and they loved it, and they wanted to do more, and they were paid for it. I think it's changed now. I think whatever was happening 6 months or a year ago wouldn't even be the same anymore as far as people's awareness of podcasting and the kind of excitement of, so people got so excited about the S-Town score. I think it, hang in there, because I think it's just really clicking over very fast. And as long as there's budget for music, I think it's just going to grow massively, and musicians are just are going to love it.
And I think too, you as a music school dropout would probably know better than us where to find those people. Like they, and I think that maybe approaching people as collaborators from the start of a project can be the best way to go about that, and kind of find someone who's like invested in whatever your creative vision for it is. If someone's doing something for free or for not, as much money as you're getting or whatever, then I think that it is easier to start from the beginning and kind of go, let's do this together, and get someone who has that sort of creative investment as well. Do you have any suggestions?
I think finding people who are at a similar point in their career to you just kind of makes it easier somehow. That's my main takeaway from that, I think.
Sorry, I always have a question. It's been really great to hear you guys talk about great sound design and music. Bit of a downer, but I wonder, what are the most common things that you hear people do really badly with music and sound design, or just really wrong?
I heard something the other day that I'm not going to mention because it's being recorded, but I just thought it was the most awful thing I'd ever heard. And it sounded like place marker music that no one got around to replacing. And I think that's something to think about, is when your ears are fresh, like really choose the moment that you're going to put the music in. And I would avoid just personally using place marker music, because I think it begins to answer to its own rhymes and create its own inevitability, and you get used to wanting to hear that thing, and when you go to actually do it, something else might sound substandard that might be infinitely better. So that's just one mistake, maybe.
So you're talking about if you're like working on something and you're not going to cope with the music just yet, and you put something in there because you want to evoke a similar feeling, you go, I'm going to put something better in later, and it just sometimes never happens. You're like, oh no, this is good.
Well, it might not happen, or it might affect your choices later. It's just a personal thing for me, and I've had that experience with something before, where something was changed. I was like, I got really sort of uptight about the change, even though I think it was better. So, yeah, it's just a little thing to think about.
What about you, John? What do you not like?
Oh, man, I wish I had such good sick burns, but I just really think that the thing that bugs me probably the most when people use music badly is, like, there's just the balance is really off. Like, the vocal might be an iPhone recording and the music is, like, full-spectrum pop banger. And it just, like, one thing just highlights the shitness of the other, or they're both really tinny, and then there's like a marimba and you can't hear what the vocal is doing, and it, stuff like that is just like a couple more drafts.
I think too, something that we didn't get a chance to talk about today, but that's important, is how the music's treated as well, something you both feel quite strongly about. So yeah, similar to that, so how you, no matter what music you're using, even if it's like the most beautiful thing ever and it's perfect for that spot, if you treat it in the right way, that's going to make all the difference.
Yeah, and I think it's something that producers probably need to get a bit more comfortable with, is, you might not be, not everyone out there who's making stuff, you might not be a sound engineer, but to get a bit more comfortable with doing stuff to the music so it isn't just plonked there clean. And there was an example I was going to play of that where Nina Simone gets sort of drowned in reverb and disappears in sort of pre-delay into Chicago. But it's another thing to think about, is like, what can I do rather than just sit it there?
Thank you.
Thanks for downloading the Third Coast Pocket Conference. You can hear more sessions like the one we shared today on the AudioCraft podcast, or check out their website, audiocraft.com.au, for more details. We've got one more AudioCraft session to share with you later this week. And after that, we'll be back in a few months with sessions from the 2018 Third Coast Conference. Until then, you can always check out our archive of conference audio at thirdcoastfestival.org or subscribe to our sister podcast, ReSound, for the best audio stories from around the world. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.